Chris Hardwick has been outed as the next subject of the Me Too movement. Patrick Stewart might be returning to his captain's chair in a new Star Trek project, and the war for Fox Studios continues between Disney and Comcast. All this and a whole lot more in an extra big-sized edition of the Movie News Wrap-Up here on the Rated Par Podcast. Hello, all you beautiful nerds. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Rated Par Podcast. I am your host, as always, Kevin Parr, a.k.a. Rated Par, a.k.a. no relation to the Parr family of The Incredibles, although one day I hope to be one. So they're about a week away from my last post. I did mean to get back on the train this Monday, but guys, I am very much under the weather at the moment. So I do excuse myself if I do cough during this session of the podcast. Just over the weekend, just my girlfriend's been sick for a while. There's a flu going around. Actually, I haven't had a real flu just yet, but my immune system is down. I just feel exhausted all day, tired all day. But I've been wanting to get this podcast out to you because so much is going on in the world of movie news and pop culture right now. It is insane. So this is going to be a bit of an extra long edition. So I hope you guys will follow along and you will certainly be up to date with everything going on in Hollywood. And we are going to start off with a very, very huge story that broke just a couple days ago. Chris Hardwick, for those of you who don't know, is a very big figure in the world of fandom, nerd culture, Hollywood. He basically was one of the pioneers of getting podcasts up to a worldwide level. And his podcast, The Nerdist Podcast, is one of the most downloaded podcasts around. It's a celebration of geek culture. He interviews a lot of celebrities, and he's gone on to change that podcast into a huge company that he is a CEO of. He is, one of his most famous shows, obviously, is Talking Dead, where it was basically an after show for The Walking Dead on AMC that did very, very well. He's done a lot of hosting gigs. He's hosted panels at Comic-Con and a ton of other projects. But recently, they're calling it an essay, and I guess an essay that went viral on the app Medium from a known actress named Chloe Dykstra, who was an ex-girlfriend of Chris Hardwick's for about 3 years. And in this essay, Chloe Dykstra goes on to accuse Chris Hardwick of many, many, many detailed counts of mental abuse, emotional abuse, and not necessarily sexual abuse, but definitely sort of mixing in all three of them. The essay itself is very long, so I won't be reading it verbatim word for word. If you like, you can go onto Google, search Medium, Chloe Dykstra essay, Chris Hardwick, and you will find it. But the essay in a nutshell paints the picture of a man who was very, very controlling, was more into creating connections with celebrities and people in the industry than letting her hang out with her own friends. According to her, he set guidelines of, like, you can't be talking to your friends. If we're at dinner, you can't be talking to me because I don't want people to hear our conversations. She describes him needing her to be sexually ready for him pretty much at all times. There's an example that she she got pregnant, had it dealt with, and it was a very complicated surgery that needed to be taken place. And in the hospital bed, once the doctor came back and said everything was okay, the first words that have supposedly out of Chris Hardwick's mouth was, "When can I have sex with her again?" And the essay just goes on and on for many, many different examples like this. Stating that, you know, they were in a relationship for 3 years, and then near the end, it kind of ended. She wound up meeting a new guy and technically cheated on him with him, but just wanted a way to get out of it. And as a result of that, she states that Chris Hardwick sabotaged her career, that she couldn't get work in Hollywood, that she had close friends of hers basically betray her, and she just couldn't get work. She was blacklisted from a lot of projects, saying that Chris would call people personally and tell them, don't hire her, don't work with her. This leading to like anorexia and mental instability, and it's just a fucking nightmare situation that nobody should be in and nobody should be treated as such. So this essay goes viral and is a top story on every nerd news outlet, pop culture outlet. And in the wake of the world we live in now, action needed to be taken, even though nothing technically had been proven yet. That these allegations were, as far as we know at this moment, has just been words from an essay, but in the world we live in, we have to take everything at face value. So a bunch of Chris Hardwick's companies pulled the plug on his projects, his current shows, everything. AMC pulled off two shows that are hugely popular, Talking with Chris Hardwick, because it's basically like a talk show version of his podcast, and The Talking Dead, which has been going on for 8, 9, 10 seasons now. The BBC America panels and the AMC panels at Comic-Con also said he will not be coming, and Comic-Con said that they will not have him host any panels. Basically, this news got out, and the cord was cut from all of his projects, even his own company, Nerdist, which he was the CEO of, and I'm not sure if he is anymore. The story says that he had basically taken a bit of a step back from ownership of the company, that he was involved in other ways, but that his name has been removed from the Nerdist website, that the people at Nerdist who own the company made a statement saying, like, you know, we're not sure what's going to go on with this, but that Chris Hardwick has not been involved in the company for a while now, that he's been doing his own projects outside of it. So it's pretty fucking crazy, guys. He has come out and said a rebuttal to these allegations, basically saying, you know, I was really sad to hear this news come out. I'm sorry that Chloe had such a hard time. Basically, and then going on to say, like, as a father, as a son, as a husband, I do not condone the abuse of women in any way, shape, or form. And he pretty much outright denied it. Stating a little bit of reasons why she might be doing these things. And then recently another update came out, because in this essay as well, Chloe Dykstra went on to say that she has proof that Chris Hardwick did these things, whether that's recordings, video, text messages, whatever. And one of those text messages actually surfaced from TMZ. And the excerpt from Hardwick's text says the following, and it has to do with this sort of cheating situation that led to them breaking up. And the text says, "Some things have recently come to my attention, and I believe I have a much more accurate picture about everything that's been going on, particularly with you and Sam. I know you maintain that this separation was about your freedom and finding yourself, which I would be a dickhead to deny you, but it's silly to say that he has nothing to do with it at all. Even though we're technically not together and you have no responsibility to me any longer, it all started while we were together, and its continuation, quite frankly, almost destroyed me. I felt worthless, replaceable, and disrespected by your choice of a guy that I have to work with. I realize that my emotions are my problem, and now that I've had some time alone, I'm thinking a lot more clearly about everything. As such, I'm done with you and all of this, and I'm moving on. No more taking a break. No more maybe we can be together at some point. We're just done." So this does fall in line with the narrative that she depicted, but this doesn't really paint the picture of somebody who's manipulating and, you know, the evil character that she seems to be portraying in her story as well. But again, we don't know the full story. This is just a text that came out. So we'll just have to keep waiting and see. I mean, we don't know if more texts will come out. We don't know if maybe videos will start popping up or audio recordings. But to say the least, the damage has been done to Chris Hardwick. Even if this story unfolds and, you know, for whatever reason, if the accusations made against him weren't as severe, or maybe there was misinformation going on, like, you don't get let go by all these companies and then the companies being like, oh, sorry, I guess it's not a big deal, we'll get back, we'll take you back. Like, he's pretty much done, guys. Then and this is huge. So, but when you read the essay, it's very brutal, it's very descriptive, and I mean, in this day and age, you know, I'm in the camp of I believe women. I think that someone to make up any story like this would be just downright weird and stupid and not needed, because the backlash these women get from outing these people and revealing these stories is so severe that doing it to gain any kind of, you know, foothold in the entertainment industry or to blackmail somebody just doesn't really seem like it would be worth it. So we'll see, guys. I mean, well, hopefully some more proof will come to light so that no one will just be second guessing and saying hearsay. But man, and Chris Hardwick, and in her essay as well, she describes Chris Hardwick being such a nice dude on camera when people are around, and he portrays that personality on camera. The nicest guy ever, super sweet, joking, laughing. And then she said when the cameras were off, he was just kind of cold and calculating and just not that person at all. So if you're a Chris Hardwick fan, I feel ya. I'm sorry that this news came to light, but man, it's all coming out now, guys. If you were a dick in Hollywood, if you are not a nice person, if you're two-faced, you are getting your fucking cord cut, essentially. There's nowhere left to hide. As this story develops, I'll keep reporting on it, but man, go and read that essay because it is worth the read. The battle for Fox Studios and the X-Men franchise, the Fantastic Four franchise, Deadpool, they are all up for grabs right now, guys. And this bidding war has been some of the top news stories over the past month, because basically, if you don't know, Fox Studios, the studio that has made those franchises that I just discussed, is up for sale for whatever reason. Some things aren't making as much money. The company needs to not go bankrupt. I'm not really sure what the reason is they want to sell their movie division. Maybe the TV division's been doing much better. Their movies have not been doing great. As you know, if you've been watching a lot of X-Men movies, some are great, some tank. So there has been a bidding war going on, basically between Disney, who owns Marvel, who owns Lucasfilm, and Comcast, which I'm not even sure if they really own any kind of property. They're basically just a giant media conglomerate. But they've been having a bidding war back and forth between who gets to own Fox Studios. Now, a lot of movie fans, nerd fans like myself, want to see Disney take it over, because obviously that would mean that Disney could incorporate the X-Men and Fantastic Four into the Marvel Universe, which would be mind-blowing. Not only that, but Deadpool? I mean, you can bet your ass that if Disney got Fox Studios, Hugh Jackman would, I think, by law, would have to come back as Wolverine for just one scene where he stands with the Avengers and Deadpool. I'm just saying. But, so this bidding war has been going back and forth for a while. And even the government was getting involved at one point, worrying that if Disney got Fox Studios acquired, that they would just become too powerful and them as a company would just be unstoppable, which is a trend in business and in Hollywood in general, that, you know, any corporation, they can't acquire too many things because they start to create a monopoly and they just have too much power in the modern world. But those kind of interventions have since, I think, come and gone. So the newest part to the story is that while negotiations have been going back and forth, Comcast made a cash offer, which is really unheard of in these situations. Most companies will offer a lot of different assets, not only just cash, but stock, maybe land, maybe development deals, you know what I mean? Like, it's not just money. But Comcast decided to say, you know what? Fuck that. We're going to give you $65 billion cash. They want to offer Fox Studios a cash offer. No divvying it up in other resources, nothing. Straight up fucking money, which is insanity. And that hit the web when that news broke a few days ago all over the place, because everyone's been thinking that Disney has this locked in. And then this cash offer comes out, which in the world of business is a big deal when you offer that much in just cash alone. But now the next step in this development deal just came out, with Walt Disney Company replying with a offer of $71.3 billion. But this will not be just cash. It would be a mixture of cash and stock in an attempt to try to sway the Fox executives from the Comcast deal. And a Bob Iger, who is the CEO of Walt Disney Company, who's been, you know, one of those leading forces in the Marvel Universe, the Lucasfilm acquisition, he had this to say: the acquisition of 20th Century Fox will bring significant financial value to the shareholders of both companies. And after 6 months of integration planning, we're even more enthusiastic and confident in the strategic fit of the assets and the talent at Fox. At a time of dynamic change in the entertainment industry, the combination of Disney's and Fox's unparalleled collection of businesses and franchises will allow us to create more appealing, high-quality content, expand our direct-to-consumer offerings and international presence, and deliver more personalized and compelling entertainment experiences to meet growing consumer demand around the world. Holy shit. So, this does not by any means mean that Disney has it. This just means the ante has been upped, and now it's up to Comcast to reply. Now, I don't know, like, who has more money. I'm gonna bet that Disney does, because it's fucking Disney. And I feel like they haven't even reached their limit as to what they can offer Fox Studios. So I feel like it's just gonna keep going back and forth, until Disney at one point just has to say, you know what, here, and just drop the biggest bomb of, like, we're going to offer $200 billion or however much Disney, can't remember how much Disney offered or got for acquiring Lucasfilm, but it was an insane amount. And they've already pretty much made their money back with Force Awakens, Star Wars. I mean, Force Awakens itself, I think, made a couple billion dollars. But this is pretty insane. And you can imagine that, you know, these numbers are so high, so insane. How are they going to make their money back? Well, you got to think about the franchise potential of acquiring Fox. There's already three built-in franchises that would do insane amounts of money if done well. And I would imagine that they would probably make them their own universes, because it's already there. It's built in. So you have Deadpool, you have X-Men, Fantastic Four, you could cross them over, you could make multiple movies, you could do spin-off movies of different characters, you could integrate them into the Marvel universe if you wanted to. Like, the amounts of money to be made would be endless. So them offering $70 billion, I think, is not ludicrous in the grand scheme of things. They'd probably make their money back in 15 years. And then they could just keep churning these things out, you know, until the end of time. So more on this as this develops, but man, I myself am kind of rooting for Disney to take it over. There's another sort of side to the story with people wanting Comcast to have it, because they want Marvel to keep moving along and making the movies they're making without, you know, that production schedule getting stunted or sidetracked or slowed down. That's because, you know, when you go to a theater and you can see Marvel movies, DC movies, and X-Men movies, it, you know, that's the best thing ever. But, you know, it would be fucking sick to see the X-Men, the Fantastic Four, Deadpool, and the Avengers all in one movie one day. Just saying. Anyone out there fans of Star Trek Discovery? The new Star Trek show that I think aired on Amazon or CBS Online. I'm actually a big fan of it. I really dig it. I haven't finished it yet. I don't know if I'm caught up, but I really liked the new vibe. I liked that it was kind of JJ inspired, but also old school inspired. Well, there's a lot of development. There we go, first cough. There's a lot of development going on in the world of Star Trek TV. So this news broke, I think, just the other day that Star Trek Discovery has been going through a lot of drama lately as their showrunners of the series, their names are Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harberitz, they were actually fired recently due to apparently, and I had no idea about this, abusive working conditions that they put their writing staff through. So Alex Kurtzman, who was the lead creative in getting the show on its feet, he replaced them as showrunner of the show and now has just signed a deal with CBS that's a $25 million deal, which will be part of a five-year plan to develop more Star Trek series for the network. And apparently there are six projects that are currently in early development for all Star Trek-related shows for CBS, and one of them includes a Next Generation series sequel with Patrick Stewart reprising his role as Captain Picard. Just saying that out loud puts a smile on my face. And this all comes from Variety. Well, this section comes from Variety, stating the details of what the sort of six projects in development would be about. One of them is a teen-oriented series set at the Starfleet Academy from Stephanie Savage and John Schwartz, who is the duo behind the Dynasty reboot and the Marvel's Runaways adaptation. That is very interesting to me. A limited series with a currently confidential plot, so no news there. Another limited series based around the beloved character Khan from the Wrath of Khan movie. And apparently that's something that's been rumored for a while. And it would be spearheaded by Wrath of Khan director Nicholas Meyer. Which, you know, could be interesting. It seems like Hollywood and creatives in general right now are obsessed with exploring the villains of stories. Maybe just because, you know, it's just something new and different and going against the grain. I don't know, but could be interesting. And the last project is an animated series with another plot that's confidential and that we don't know about. But obviously the one that everyone's going crazy over is the possible Next Generation sequel series. And that was reported by The Hollywood Reporter. And in that report, they stated, the new deal comes as rumblings about another Star Trek series featuring Patrick Stewart reprising his role as Star Trek The Next Generation's Captain Jean-Luc Picard have been heating up. Sources say Kurtzman and Akiva Goldsman, who left Discovery after season one, are attached to the Stewart-led reboot. CBS TV Studios declined to confirm the Stewart project, as sources say a deal is far from completed and may not happen despite the fact that the actor recently teased his potential return to the franchise. So there you go, Star Trek fans. You have six possible shows in the works coming to you. And holy shit. I mean, I don't even know what that would look like necessarily. I'm not the biggest Star Trek fan. I don't really know the hierarchy of positions and roles in Starfleet. If he would have, you know, a main role in the show, if he would just be a glorified cameo that showed up every once in a while. Even so, if they did a next-gen sequel series, that would be huge buzz. Everyone would tune in. We all love Patrick Stewart and his ability as an actor and as Jean-Luc Picard, which is still, to date, probably my favorite captain, apart from Kirk. So more on that as this develops, but keep your eyes peeled, guys, for any Star Trek news coming out, because this would be insane. So obviously, it wouldn't be an episode of the Movie News Wrap-Up without DC Entertainment News. And this story comes, I don't know, you guys could be the judge of how you want to interpret this news. But basically, like DC loves to do, there was a lot of announcements recently about new DC projects coming out. Mainly, The ones that caught a lot of people's eyes were the announcements of two Joker movies that are reportedly happening. One being a continuation of the Jared Leto Joker that we got in Suicide Squad. And the other being a Joker origin film starring Joaquin Phoenix and being directed by Hangover director Todd Phillips. Now, why make two different Joker movies? What the fuck does that mean with two different actors? Well, reportedly, there are two worlds now being developed in the wake of the Justice League bomb, I'll just call it. There's the DCEU that we know, that they want to continue moving on with Wonder Woman, with Aquaman coming out later this year, Shazam coming out next year. They want to continue that world they've built. Now, on the other side of the road, they want to start what they're calling, and it's kind of been going back and forth on what the name is going to be, but they want to create a new DC label for their more darker films, quote unquote, called DC Dark or DC Black. And this Joker origin movie is supposedly going to be the start-off point for those series of films. And the idea behind these films is not only, it's not really supposed to be just a villain brand, but it's supposed to be a lower budgeted, character focused, gritty, dramatic movies. I'm guessing more in the vein of the Chris Nolan films that have come out, but so, and character descriptions and subtle plot details have been surfacing about this Joker spinoff with Joaquin Phoenix. And it's basically described as a gritty crime drama where you pretty much get the origin story of the Joker, how he became the Joker, his first set of crimes, the cop team that's trying to catch him. I guess in the same vein of like a Scorsese crime drama, because he is producing this one as well, but with the Joker involved and all that jazz. So, and when Joaquin Phoenix was asked about this Joker role, he's outright denied it. But release dates have now come out, and people have confirmed that it is happening. So it is going to happen, apparently. And recent news and development of this have come out because Matt Reeves, the director of the recent Planet of the Apes franchise, he is going to be next in line to direct this new Batman film. Now, a lot of controversy has also come out about this because nobody knows if Ben Affleck is going to be it. Some people have thought that, you know, at Comic-Con coming up that he would kind of stand up with Matt Reeves saying we're doing this together. But more news came out revealing that his Batman is going to be a younger Batman. It's going to be set in the past. So that most likely isn't the case. But now new news have surfaced that if Todd Phillips' Joker movie does well, if it's successful, there's talks that they might want to cross over that Joker film with Matt Reeves' Batman film in a future movie and have this Batman series of films separate from the DCEU that they've built. Now, my take on this, what the fuck? This is the dumbest shit I have ever heard of. Now, I say that now, and maybe when these new set of films come out, I fall in love with them. I love them for their dark, gritty attitude, their dramatic effect, and it makes the new sort of DCEU looks like child's play and just like kids' films, which could be the case. But I think this is just a blatant way of trying, of the company trying to cover all bases without starting from scratch. They're basically continuing their more kid-friendly Avengers-like set of films because they've poured so much money into it that they don't want to restart from scratch. But they also know that it's not technically working very well and they need to go in a new direction. So now they're going to start another line of DC films that is more in line of what we as movie fans have been wanting. Single character stories that are focused, that are true to their source material, that are amazing, that are stepping stones to possibly crossover movies in the future. Not one movie, crossover kind of film, and then crossover movie. So I kind of just think this is a stupid a stupid strategy of them just like, well, we'll continue this line of films because we already poured all this money into them and no one really cares about. And then we'll do this other sling of films that's more in tune of what people want. And if they're really successful, I bet you anything that they're just going to hop on that line of films and just kind of ditch the DCEU or find a way to integrate that into the more grittier set of films. So it's kind of all over the place, kind of interesting. When you read kind of the plot details for the Joker movies and stuff, or the Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie that's coming out, it's very weird and it's not very comic book centered because, well, there really isn't a lot of Joker origin stories out there, and you know, it could make or break the character in a lot of ways. It could either be really interesting and fun, or it could just be kind of a disaster and over explain a character that's better described in mystery and, you know, surprise than, you know, getting into who the Joker is when really he's supposed to be a chaotic storm that just rolls through and not, you know, a fully realized person. So who knows? But more on that as this develops. But what do you guys think? Do you think this is a good move by DC? It's just a tactic of them scrambling around trying to figure out a fucking fix their movie universe. I don't know, but color me interested. So for you comic book fans out there who love Robert Kirkman's work, who is the known creator for the Walking Dead series, his other big property, Invincible, just got a series order on Amazon as an animated series. Now, this is going to be, the first season will be 8-hour-long episodes based on the comic book that recently wrapped up its run after 144 issues. And these series of stories are fucking amazing, and they're one of my favorite sort of indie comic book series around. And it basically tells a story revolving around a character named Mark Grayson, who's a normal teenager, basically except for the fact that his father is basically Superman in this world. And shortly after his 17th birthday, he develops superpowers and enters his father's tutelage. You know, this whole story of the family superheroes, and his dad teaches them the ways of how to be a perfect superhero. But the story itself is very dramatic and emotional and full of blood and violence, actually, but told very, very well, sort of in that same tone of Walking Dead as it kind of rides that line of hyper-violent with emotional storylines and great characters and great situations. So, and very excellent villains, awesome villains. So this will be an animated show, most likely in the style that Robert and his team created it, in that same art style. It's being produced by Kirkman and his Skybound shingle with Simon I can't even say all these names. Basically creatives that are involved in the Teen Titans show, Walking Dead, Star Wars, the Clone Wars TV show, which is pretty exciting, and the Ultimate Spider-Man show. Cartoon show, my bad. Which the Clone Wars animated series is pretty much one of my favorite recent cartoon shows around, and them being involved gives me a lot of good hope for this. There's also going to be a feature film of Invincible currently being developed at Universal Pictures with Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg writing the script and directing, so that is also very exciting. A couple of quotes came out about the show. Sharon Ugato, head of scripted genre programming at Amazon Studios, had this to say in a statement: Robert has an uncanny talent to predict the zeitgeist, and we are incredibly excited to see him break boundaries in an animated one-hour format. In a world saturated with superhero fare, we trust Robert to subvert expectations while encapsulating a story filled with heart and adrenaline. We love his ambitious plan. Oh, excuse me, guys. This sickness is hard to get through. We love his ambitious plan for the show and believe it will look like nothing else on television. And Kirkman added, I couldn't be more proud of the series Corey Walker, Ryan Ottley, and I did together over 15 years. To know our characters will live on in multiple iterations in other media is almost too exciting to bear. What Amazon is allowing us to do in animated form is nothing short of groundbreaking, and I can't wait for our rabid fan base to experience it. So, more superhero projects coming our way, guys. And this one, and I'm a huge fan of animated shows, whether it's CGI, hand-drawn, however they go about this, this is going to be awesome. And if you are looking for a new comic book to read, to catch up on, go pick up the Volume 1 of Invincible. You will love it. It's a very light read, and it doesn't get into the darker tones that the series eventually gets into, but it is an amazing story, and this is one that you're going to want to say to your friends that you read the comic book before the show came out, because you will love it. So if you listened to my last movie news episode, you heard the story about John Lasseter getting ready to leave his position as chief creative officer at Disney Pixar Animation due to the countless sexual allegations made against him, and that he would be holding on to a position in the company until the end of the year. Until then, you know, things are kind of the way they are, but then at the end of the year, he will be gone and he will need a replacement. Well, it looks like the rumors were true, and Jennifer Lee of Frozen and Pete Docter from Inside Out will both split John Lasseter's duties at Disney and Pixar as they move forward with the development of the many film projects that the studio have in the pipeline. Jennifer Lee obviously got an Academy Award with Frozen, and I think Pete Docter did also with Inside Out. They're both the film's directors on the projects. So they will both be sharing the duties of chief creative officer for Pixar. And Lee joined Walt Disney Animation Studios in 2011 as a co-writer on Wreck-It Ralph. She then went on to co-direct Frozen, there we go, which earned her an Academy Award win for Best Animated Feature. As for Docter, he has worked at Pixar from the very beginning and has directed films such as Up and Monsters, Inc. So Lee had this to say in a statement. Animation is the most collaborative art form in the world, and it is with the partnership of my fellow filmmakers, artists, and innovators that we look ahead to the future. My hope is to support the incredible talent we have, find new voices, and work together to tell original stories. Docter then added, I started here 28 years ago. I am fortunate to work alongside some of the most talented people on the planet, and together we will keep pushing animation in new directions, using the latest technology to tell stories we hope will surprise and delight audiences around the world. So, that's big news. Officially, we have replacements for John Lasseter. Now, this is kind of where I play devil's advocate in that this is what I said last week as well, that John has been there from the very beginning leading this company into what it is today. When he leaves, will we see a change in projects, change in quality, change in story? Now, that could be a change for the worse, could be a change for the better. Who knows? I'm hoping that with these two sort of new leaders taking over the company who have been involved for so long and have directed some of the best films the company has put out, I think those worries will be laid to rest, and hopefully we'll get maybe some more dynamic stories around different characters, and they keep pushing the boundaries and keep being the leader of their industry. So this story is a bit of a shorter one, but I had to get it out there because it involves one of my favorite comedic actors of all time, Will Ferrell, and he is apparently set to star in a Netflix music competition film called Eurovision. And yes, that is the same Eurovision that started in Switzerland back in 1956, when seven West European nations participated. This year, 43 countries competed for the prize, won in Lisbon by Netta Israel performing the song Toy, ABBA. Sorry. Trying to get my bearings here, still kind of sick. Basically, this song contest is a huge deal in Europe. It's pretty much like American Idol before American Idol was a thing. And it's a singing competition that took place all across Europe. And it's pretty insane. ABBA was a winner in 1974 for Sweden, and Celine Dion was a winner in 1988 for Sweden. And among the former contestants who launched successful worldwide careers after their wins at the Eurovision Song Contest. So it's pretty insane. And Will Ferrell is going to be producing it with the Gary Sanchez Productions, along with Adam McKay as executive producer. And those production teams have been responsible for Step Brothers, Anchorman, pretty much any successful Will Ferrell comedy you can think of, that production company and team has been in place. So this is just a short little tidbit, but I am super excited to see Will Ferrell in any version of him singing, and especially in a singing contest that takes place in Europe. Two thumbs up for me. Netflix, you're doing it right. It is official that at San Diego Comic-Con, we are going to be getting our very first Aquaman trailer. The DCEU film starring Jason Momoa is going to make its worldwide first look debut at the famous Comic-Con in San Diego. This news got revealed from director James Wan putting up a tweet with a poster basically just saying DC Aquaman trailer debut, San Diego Comic-Con. So this is kind of interesting because pictures and from Entertainment Weekly recently surfaced a bunch of set photos and pictures of Jason Momoa and the cast in their respective roles and costumes. And a lot of information came out in that magazine stating, you know, James Wan really hitting home the fact that this is his film. It was made with the intention of it being separate from the extended universe and from DC films. And I can kind of concur on that because I remember reading early interviews with him before he even went to set, saying there were some production struggles going on in that the studio wanted him to make it more sort of DC universe-esque and have it connect more to the other films, and he really fought hard to separate it from that, and a couple times offered to leave the film if they kept pushing him. So, and the pictures, by the way, are fucking awesome. If you haven't seen them surface yet, they look great. The underwater scenes are shown a bit. The Kingdom of Atlantis is shown as well. So we'll see. And this trailer really, really needs to hit home. If this trailer does not do well, that's bad for the studio. This trailer needs to make people excited, interested. It needs to be a good film when it comes out. I mean, for God's sakes, this fucking movie franchise cannot take any more hits or it is out for good. But the DC panel has a very big chance to really be the talk of the town at this event and take sway over the pop culture fandom, because Marvel, for what I know, won't really be there because they don't really need to promote anything at this point. They got their Ant-Man movie coming out in July. They had the second part of Infinity War coming out, I think, next year. And that's it, really. I mean, everything else that's coming out is coming out after Infinity War Part 2. So we'll see, guys. Again, this is a bit of a short story news update, but in the month of July, keep your eyes peeled for this trailer hitting YouTube, because it is going to be a pivotal one in the DC movie landscape. By the way, Jason Momoa, you're amazing. I really hope it does well, because I want these films to keep on going. The whole DCEU thing, project, experiment, whatever you want to call it, I was really bummed out when those movies didn't do too well, because I really like DC characters, and some of the stories they have to tell are some of the best in comic books. So I don't want to see this franchise go belly up. I think there's still room to turn things around. I think there's still room to tell good stories. And if Aquaman fails, that's the kiss of death. So please be good, guys. Please, please be good. And finally, to wrap things up, we have a trailer for Creed 2 that has just dropped. And I was a big fan of Creed 1 when that came out in 2015. I thought Ryan Coogler did a picture-perfect job of presenting us with a remake reboot that was fresh, that had a different take, a different design. It wasn't just the old film regurgitated for a new audience. It really had something to say, and Michael B. Jordan was an excellent lead in this film that pretty much transformed his body into a hulking, muscly mass. Sylvester Stallone getting, I think he won Best Supporting Actor, or was at least nominated at the Academy Awards. Amazing film, and this is a second installment that Ryan Coogler is not a part of, maybe in a producing standpoint, but he actually dropped this film to go direct Black Panther. And this film has a new director, who I can't really remember at this point, but the trailer gives a good depiction of what the film may be. I feel like after watching it, it was very focused on the, you don't think I can beat this guy, can you? Which is, you know, a very appropriate for a Rocky franchise. And in this new film, he actually fights Drago's son, the Russian that killed Apollo Creed. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. You know, when successful films get a sequel and it's not the original director helming it, it's either just not as good as the first one, or it goes in a completely new direction and it is actually holds up to the standard of the original, or sometimes surpasses it. We didn't get a lot of emotional beats in this trailer, unlike the first one. They're really focused on the overcoming the obstacle of, you don't think I can beat him, and then quick shots of just punches being flown around and everything. So I'm missing that emotional beat from it, but I love this world and I love this franchise, so it got me excited to see Michael B. Jordan back in the ring, and I can't wait to see it when it comes out. If you haven't seen it, go on YouTube right now, check it out, let me know what you thought. All right, and that is going to do it for this edition of the Rated Par podcast. Thank you guys for indulging my sickness and helping me get through this episode. And again, apologies for waiting pretty much a week for another edition, but I promise once I'm back on my feet, these will be coming out regularly. Thank you so much for listening as always, and to put down that remote and go watch a motherfucking movie. Now I'm going to lay on the couch and die. Peace!